Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Aniva nijon nego shabot ya, nijon nego shabot ya. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Way. Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Oh,
music from Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah from her Silver Wave Records entitled Peace and Power, the best of Joanne Shenandoah, and that song was entitled Peace and Power. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is program 6 of our very special series interview with environmentalist Joy Ezell. Great greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a conversation with environmental community and peace activist Joy Ezell. Joy shares Yat Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and promoting environmental social justice. Joy Ezell's activism exemplifies the important ethic of thinking globally and acting locally. Some of the issues she is fighting with her community organization include environmental, economic, and social impacts of the multinational corporation PG&E Buckeye Paper Mill, a proposed 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, and United States military plans to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area. These and other issues are topics of today's conversation when Joy visited us here at Yat Kitishi Native Center. Yat Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, in keeping with the indigenous ethic of caring for future generations, is why we are honored to be part of the worldwide environmental justice anti-globalization movement. Most every Wolf Mountain Radio program focuses on some aspect of defending our biosphere, as well as promoting sovereignty and self-determination of traditional cultures around the world. I personally have had the honor over the past 35 years to see firsthand and fight against many cases of environmental and social injustices in different parts of the globe. In my travels, I have met many fine and courageous people who are working to create a better world. Each Earth warrior I've met renews my energy to continue to defend Mother Earth. Joy Ezell is one such friend. Joy Ezell and I share a similar background and experiences as Earth justice activists. We both grew up in rural areas where agriculture and forestry dominate the political and economic society. Like feudal kingdoms, agribusiness and forest industries rule the region. Anyone who questions those dragons does so under great threat. As a forest ecologist who has spent much of my life fighting forest industries around the world who destroy and pollute traditional cultures and ecosystems, Joy Ezell's battle against the Buckeye pulp and paper mill is particularly special to me. This company is responsible for serious environmental health impacts from their poisonous discharge effluents that contaminate the region's creeks and rivers and poison underground aquifer needed for drinking water. The mill also is the engine that drives the excessive and unsustainable cutting down of forests, raping the land. Historically, the landscape of the region now called North Florida, where Joy lives, was a beautiful ecosystem with a rich diversity of plant and animal species. Variations in topography, soil types, and hydrology created a unique watershed. It was first home to ancient culture peoples, such as the Apalaches, Tallahassees, Timucuas, and other tribal nations who lived in peace with nature. The arrival of Spanish explorers to the so-called New World did have an impact to the land, but the forest and wet prairie creek environment was still able to survive. Southeast Indians, who are now known as Florida Seminoles and Yuchi Creeks, for generations lived in harmony with this land. Early white settlers, like Joy Ezell's family, found the region a near paradise. Large cypress trees and longleaf pine, hardwood hammocks, marshes, creeks, and freshwater springs allowed rural communities to flourish. Coastal areas had the bounty of the Gulf of Mexico. Now this once beautiful area, like so many places around the world, is under assault. This biologically fragile area is quickly being destroyed. The unique old-growth forests have been cut down to feed the ever-demanding pulp and paper industry's greed for timber. PG&E's Buckeye Mill is like a giant vacuum cleaner sucking up the forests. It leaves a scarred landscape. So-called reforestation is nothing more than agro-industrial plantations, monoculture tree farms, which depend upon heavy inputs of chemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides, now predominantly the landscape. Wiped out are the unique species of fauna and flora that once supported a diverse variety of wildlife. Hazardous waste, such as highly toxic dioxins, which are carcinogenic and mutagenic poisons, spew out from the Buckeye paper plant. These poisons greatly impact animal, plant, and human health. I first met Joy Ezell at a conference focusing on dioxin more than a decade ago. The conference, sponsored by the great citizen activist organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, documented testimony from many grassroots groups that were and continue to battle corporate polluters. This great environmental justice organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, under the leadership of our friend Lois Gibbs, still helps communities around the nation fight toxic waste sites. Lois, by the way, organized the Love Canal campaign against the infamous Hooker Chemical Company that contaminated her neighborhood in the 1970s. Not too long ago, I had the privilege to be a speaker with Lois Gibbs again at the 25th Anniversary Legal Environmental Action Foundation Environmental Justice Conference in Tallahassee, Florida. On my way there, I had the opportunity to again visit the Buckeye plant to witness the paper mill's pollution. The situation that I have briefly described exemplifies many places throughout the world which are under attack by multinational corporations and government land use plans. While my conversation with Joy Ezell focuses on the region now called North Florida, the issues facing her community could be nearly anywhere in the world. Florida, in many ways, is like a so-called third world country. Much of the state is run by a government-corporate elite partnership. Forest industries, such as in Joy's Taylor County, phosphate mining in central Florida, or agribusinesses such as sugarcane, citrus, vegetables, and even cattle ranching in the region where I live, not to mention unsustainable urbanization, are greatly impacting the environment and human societies. It is also important to remember that Florida is still Dixieland, the Deep South. While there has been some cosmetic change in relations between the races, socioeconomic differences and perhaps more subtle segregation still exists, especially in the region where Joy Ezell is from. This makes her activism very special and very important. Yad Kiddushin Native Center is privileged to have Joy Ezell on our program today. Welcome, Joy Ezell. In our conversation, I would like for you to share a little bit of personal background about your experience growing up in rural America, rural Florida. Your very interesting business card underneath your name says environmental activist, the organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. But I know you also share a lot of common concerns and experiences and even education about rural community development and agriculture as I did. Would you please share some of your background in agriculture and rural community development, how you worked for chemical companies as a pesticide sales person after college, and that was really the catalyst that got you thinking and got you to become an environmental activist.
Grew up in Perry, Florida, up in Taylor County, up in North Florida. Grew up on a farm, went off to school and studied agricultural business, and went to work for a chemical company and sold some of the worst agricultural chemicals that there were known to man, some FMC Ag Chemicals. This is the company that I worked for first. Got to learn a whole lot about different kinds of chemicals and what they did, and I was afraid that I was ruining the environment. And this was way back in the 70s now, so it was a long time ago. I got really worried about what I was doing about the environment, and I thought that I was doing the wrong thing. And so I went back to school and got my master's, and unfortunately I went to work for another chemical company and sold even worse chemicals than I did to start off with. But it taught me a whole lot, because when I moved back home in 1981, first thing my grandmother told me was that the water was polluted at home. in Taylor County. And I said, what are you talking about, Mama? And she said, well, Buckeye's in the water. You know, you can't drink the water down here anymore because it's got Buckeye. And what she meant was the paper mill effluent was in the water, that they had contaminated the aquifer. And so, consequently, our well water was contaminated. I couldn't believe that nobody was, you know, raising all kinds of holy hell about it, but nobody was saying a word. It was very, very a quiet thing, and only really a very few people actually knew about it. So I started asking questions, and I found out that some of those chemicals that were in our water were very similar to some of the chemicals that I had been selling for all those years. My son was about 12 years old at that time, and his name was Trey. And every day when I took him to school or took him back home from school, we had to cross the Finn Holloway River, and that's the river that's so polluted from the mill. And he would look at me and he would say, Mama, why don't you make them clean up that river? It's so nasty, it's so black, and it's so ugly, it's so polluted. And, you know, kids think you can do everything in the world, and I just kind of passed it off for a while there, and I said, yeah, sure, Trey, you know, I'll get to that. That'll be my next project. He kept on at me until I really did get interested in it. And so I started asking questions. I made a trip to back then to the DER, and of course they didn't want to talk to me. And I made a trip up to Atlanta to the EPA, and they pretty much wanted to just brush me aside and get me out of there. The more I learned, the more upset I became, and the more convinced I was that we had a really, really bad problem in Taylor County with the river. So that's what got me started on all my environmental work. I found out that I remember the day in 1986 that I found out that the dioxin that was being sent out from the mill in the effluent was exactly the same chemical as Agent Orange. And that was a very depressing day for me, because back then there was hardly anybody for me to talk to at home about that kind of thing. You know, nobody wanted to talk to me about it. It was a taboo subject in Taylor County. You just didn't criticize the mill because that was where everybody worked, the main source of income for people there, the only big employer in the county. And you just didn't really want to criticize them very much, or you'd be blacklisted. And when I finally did sort of come out of the closet about it and become vocal about it, the local paper called me an armed radical environmental terrorist. And when they called me that, I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew I was making points and doing what I should be doing. I was on the right track. I met Honest years ago. We've been to several environmental meetings together. We were at the dioxin meeting in Tallahassee years ago together. We were both at the Cassini demonstration back in 89. We've been to several different kinds of environmental and peace meetings through the years, and I'm so pleased to be with y'all today.
Joy, the region of North Florida where you live proudly boasts that it is the tree capital of the South. Forestry, as we've been discussing, is a primary political and economic force in Taylor County. My next question is, what are the impacts of industrial forestry to the land and people of this region? PG&E, the parent company of the Buckeye Paper Mill, on their website says, quote, improving the lives of consumers worldwide is about more than just great products. It's about taking responsibility for environmental quality, for corporate governance, and for relationships with communities in which we live and operate our business, unquote. Time prevents me from much further personal detailed commentary. I could share many examples from various parts of the world where I have seen great destruction to forests and traditional communities for multinational forest industries. For many indigenous peoples, this has meant desecration of our sacred homelands. As I mentioned earlier in our interview, my friend Ralph Nader's book, The Paper Plantation, illustrates what timber companies and pulp mills have done to my once beautiful Wabanaki territory, now called Maine. Joy, what are your comments on this question of forestry and land use?
The one thing that I've learned through my life that's always a constant is that things do change. It may take a long time, but things do change. These paper mills here in Florida are getting old. They're antiques. They've been operating for 40, 50 years, some of them 60. Things do change. They will come to an end one day. They will either pick up and move to South America or another country where they'll do the same thing that they've been doing in North Florida all these years, where they can get away with environmental destruction, where there are no rules, basically the same as it's been in Florida. Or they will just come to an end because of the marketplace. People are becoming more aware now all the time of chlorine-free paper products, chlorine-free paper towels, chlorine-free toilet paper, chlorine-free disposable diapers and sanitary napkins, and those products are on the market, and people can buy them if you look for them. You have to go to a health food store usually to find them, but they are available. They are common in Europe because they don't use chlorine and chlorine dioxide in their meals over there. It's kind of like, I think what these meals are doing is they are going to operate as long as they possibly can on expired permits. It's interesting, you can't drive without a driving license. You'll get caught pretty quick, but these mills have been able to go for years and years with no operating permit because they tied up in court. They turn in and blame it on the environmental community for tying up permits in court. But that's one of the few ways that you can make a difference, is to tie up their operating permits and keep them from having a valid operating permit for several years. At least it draws attention to the fact that they are operating without a permit. And even if a permit, of course, means I give you permission to pollute, is exactly what that means. So the tighter you can possibly make a permit on them, with more restrictions, the better off the environment and the people in the area and the wildlife's going to be. The mill in Perry, Procter & Gamble Buckeye Mill, has been able to operate for many, many years now without a valid operating license. And now the EPA and DEP are giving them a permit, which allows them to build the pipeline to the Gulf of Mexico. And they're doing the same thing with the other mills in North Florida. They're allowing them to build a pipeline to a larger mixing zone so that they can get around the rules. And this is basically wrong. I don't see how much longer this can go on, because people are going to become aware of this and people are going to rise up and say, no, this is wrong. You cannot do this. We will not allow it. So we're willing to do whatever it takes to stop them from getting permitted to build these pipelines. This is the wrong thing to do. It's not environmentally correct. It's not smart. It's not good for anything in the long run except the paper mill. It's good for their bottom line. They're going to spend as much building these pipelines as it would to cost them if they did the right thing and changed the processes in the mill. They could spend exactly that same amount, say $40 million, to build a pipeline. They could spend that much money to do process changes in the mill and really make a big difference in it. So about the only thing you can do is try to tie up their permits, to try to head them in the right direction into having a permit that's usable and safer and a smarter way to be permitted.
Under the so-called Clean Air Act, under the so-called Clean Water Act, under Endangered Species Act, National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, and other state as well as county ordinances, at least on paper, there is what in English is called compliance and monitoring requirements for permit applications and granted permits. Can you talk about how companies, especially this pulp and paper industry, has been notorious for non-compliance? And I would imagine there's been a number of so-called spills or accidents that have been unreported. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, basically the way this works is that the EPA does not come down and test the water. They depend on the companies themselves to supply them with the testing data. The companies report this information to the EPA, and of course the companies report to the EPA only what they want the EPA to know. It's not like people think it is. The EPA is not looking out for you. I hate to tell you this. If you don't know this already, then that's just the way it is. They are not looking out for the environment. They're not looking out for your health or the health of the wildlife or the earth in any way. They're not doing that. They are there to provide a service, basically, to the polluters. They call them their clients. I can't stress enough how it's the Environmental Procrastination Agency. And the State Department is the department that's don't expect protection. It's not the Department of Environmental Protection. It's don't expect protection, because they're just not giving that to you. The tax money goes into them, but you don't get back what you deserve and what you need. The environment is not being served well because of these agencies, because of this very fact. The polluters themselves write the rules. They go to the Environmental Regulation Commission meetings that sets the rules. They go to Congress and they get the laws passed that they want. They have a lot more political power than we as environmentalists do. That's not to say that we don't have power. One of my friends, Linda Young, with the Clean Water Network, always tells us that they may have more money, but we have more people. And that is absolutely a fact. I know that to be true. We can get things done through people whereas those polluters have a really hard time convincing people that they're doing the right thing, because they're not. Your own common sense, if you listen to them and really pay attention to what they're saying, your own common sense will tell you that they're lying to you. They're not telling you the truth. They are not there to protect the environment. They don't have the environment in mind. The only thing that they care about is their bottom line, the profit that they make at the end of the year. And that's a really sad thing, because people's health, the health of the environment, the earth, is suffering because of this attitude that they have. And what it all boils down to is money. That's exactly what it comes to.
One of the results and effects of pollution, of course, human health. Here, for example, in what's now called Southwest Florida, the Everglades region, no longer advisable, that's the English term, to eat or consume any of the fish, for example, out of the canals and water bodies and creeks and the Everglades itself. We have mercury contamination and other heavy metals, despite the fact that many poor people still continue to fish, because that's really a so-called cheap source of food and also a recreation that doesn't cost these poor people, you know, anything to do. And of course, where I come from, where we were a hunting and gathering culture, hunting deer and moose and eating a lot of the beautiful plant relatives before they were contaminated, was something I grew up with. But now, for example, up home, if you eat moose meat, you run the risk of very large doses of poisons or toxins that's gone up in the food chain. I would imagine in your part of rural Florida, many people still hunt for some of their subsistence deer and perhaps turkey and fish. Does the so-called county health department or state health officials provide any warnings, or people are aware of how seriously affected they can jeopardize their health as poisons accumulate up through the food chain into the human body?
No, not really. You would think that when you go to buy a fishing license, that they would tell you how much fish you should eat, where you should fish, where it's safe to fish and where it's not safe to fish. And they really don't do that. The state of Florida is falling way, way behind in their duties, and they're in dereliction of their duties, is the way I look at this, in letting people know where fish are safe to eat and where they're not. They do not post the Fen Holloway River as polluted as it is. In fact, the State Department of Health now says that it's safe to eat the fish in the Fen Holloway because of a false study that Procter & Gamble Buckeye did on the fish. It was actually a rigged study, which they caught some tarpon in a trap at the discharge pipe now, 19, 20 miles inland from the Gulf. The researchers had tried to shock the fish, couldn't catch any. They had tried to net them and couldn't catch any in the river. And so they put some traps in the river and left them there for 24 hours. And lo and behold, they came back and found a tarpon and a largemouth bass in the traps right at the discharge pipe. Now, you and I both have enough common sense to know that a tarpon and a largemouth bass are not going to be 20 miles inland in a trap there at the discharge pipe. It's just not possible. First of all, there's not enough dissolved oxygen in the water for them to live very long, so they were obviously placed in those traps. Well, when they did the dioxin test on those fish, of course there was no dioxin in them because they didn't come from the Fen Holloway. So this was a rigged study, but the Department of Health used this to justify saying that it's okay to eat the fish in the Fen Holloway now, what few fish there are. That would basically be the mosquito fish that are changing sex. The female fish are taking on male sexual characteristics. And the bowfin, what's commonly called mudfish in Florida, they have lungs and gills. They can live in very low oxygen water. And this is not really water. Water is H2O. My friend Janice says this is two parts horrible and one part odor. So it's not really water. You can't call it water. It's pulp mill effluent, which is very high, very toxic. Very toxic to all kinds of fish. Very toxic to every kind of wildlife. There are no frogs on the Fen Holloway. You won't see any frogs there. There's alligators in it, and the fat in the alligators is very highly contaminated with dioxin. So, you know, this was a false study. The agencies just take for granted that the mills are telling them the truth. And a lot of times the researchers are so co-opted because of the fact that the mill itself is paying for the study. And if they don't come up with the right conclusions to the study, then their funding's cut off. It's a very complicated matter, and you have to really study it to really find out the truth about things, but the companies themselves are paying for the studies. There aren't any signs on the river. The state agencies have not posted any signs to tell people to not eat the fish. Back in the 90s, when this controversy was really hot and in the newspapers almost every week, the DEP put up some signs that said this is a Class V, meaning 5, river, not designated for recreation, which doesn't tell people that it's an industrial river still. It does not tell people to not fish in it or swim in it. I've never seen anybody swimming in the Finn Holloway. I think that people's common sense would just tell them that it smells so bad and looks so bad that they would know better than to swim in it. It's very toxic, so you would not want to be in it for very long if you did accidentally have to wade in it for some reason or get your hand in it. You should know better than that. But there are no signs on the river. Our little group, for a long time, posted signs on the river. Of course, they were ripped down pretty quick after we posted them. They were orange and had skull and crossbones on them and told of all the dangers of dioxin and the different health effects that you can get from dioxin and the birth defects, endometriosis, cancer, diabetes, on and on, the whole list of things that are caused by dioxin or more commonly called Agent Orange. The state said that they didn't have enough money to post the river. So I made up a whole bunch of them on orange paper, and we coated them we laminated them or put them in plastic sleeves, and we posted them along the river. For years we did that. They would stay up for a little while, and then they'd be torn down. But we figured at the end of that it cost us about 8 cents a sign with our time, with everything involved in the resources of doing this. So I think that if the state can't afford 8 cents a sign, that's a pretty sad commentary on the way that our tax money is spent. But people need to know. None of the rivers that I've ever seen or talked about or heard from people are adequately posted. You are not told where there's mercury in the water. You're not told where there's dioxin in the water. And you're not told where the fish are contaminated. And that is something that needs to be done. If you're not going to make effort to clean it up, at least you should let people know what's safe and what's not safe.
It was a long time ago. Seminoles made us against their odds and foes. For he loved the Florida sand. Osceola said, my people will always be Florida Seminole. And Florida will always be waters, my land of gold. Okeechobee blue waters and Okeechobee sand. Okeechobee blue waters and Okeechobee sand. Oh,
carefree game. Seven old Choctaw Cherokees had no friend. People will always be far to see him. And Florida will always be my home, sweet home. Grancy Waters, my land of gold. Okeechobee's blue waters and Okeechobee's sand. Okeechobee's blue waters and Okeechobee's sand.
Ah!
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns.
Yatkidichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yatkidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yatkidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yatkidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yatkidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yatkidichi's Kinonwatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yatkidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yatkidichi Native Center, write to Yatkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yatkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinowatakusin, to all of our relations.
The song you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program identification was a traditional drum honoring song from Iyabe from their Abra record CD, Miracle, and the title of that drum song was Straight from the Heart. And we started off our music set with a very special song from Paul Buster, my friend, a Florida Seminole brother who sang a song about his homeland here, his Florida Everglades Okeechobee region. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Please stay tuned next week for Program 7 in our very special series, my conversation with community environmental activist Joy Ezell from her organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. And if you want to find out more about the work of HOPE, look up their website, www.hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. Once again, you can learn even more about the issues we're talking about in this interview series from HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment website, www.hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. Or you can also go on a Google search and type in Save Taylor County, Florida residents, and that too will give you some very fine background information on these very important subjects. Well, we're nearly out of time, and so we're going to conclude today's broadcast with a song from Rafi, a well-known environmental singer-songwriter. And this song is entitled We Are Not Alone. Until next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinawantakwasin to all of our relations.
We are not alone, those of us who care that the coming generations might live free from contamination. We are not alone, something tells me we are not alone. We are not afraid to make our feelings known, to help our friends and neighbors, to share in our concern. Won't you listen with your heart to this song of ours? We are not alone. We're crying, shut down the spread of atomic waste. We're crying, shut down the threat of a nuclear haze. We're saying, no more can we believe that it's safe to hide our heads in the sand and pretend not to understand the poisoning of our land. Oh, we are not alone, those of us who care that the coming generations might live free from contamination. We are not alone, something tells me we are not alone. For the sake of our children, let's come to our senses. In the name of love, let us come to our senses. In the threat to life, nobody profits. There isn't a moment to lose while we still have a chance to choose where our future goes. Oh, we are not alone, those of us who care that the coming generations might live free from contamination. We are not alone, something tells me we are not alone. Oh, we are not alone. Hey, we are not alone.